All right, now we're going to look at Prussia, also known as the House of Hohenzollern, after the people who are going to rule there. And we'll start with a brief background of Brandenburg, but I think you need to know where Brandenburg is. And you can see it there on the map where Brandenburg is. It's near where we would call Berlin today, which is in Germany. It's kind of cut off from the sea at the point we're studying. The land kind of sucked. It was known as the sandbox of the Holy Roman Empire because it had such terrible soil that not very much stuff grew there. We're going to be talking about Prussia. If you look where Prussia is, you can see Prussia there on the map also up above Poland. It's actually separate from Brandenburg. This map kind of has different periods of time here, but Prussia is separate from Brandenburg. It was actually part of Poland. After 1618, though, Prussia is going to be ruled by the Elector of Brandenburg, which we're going to be talking about in a second. So, let's take a look at a background of Brandenburg after you see where it is there on the map. The ruler of Brandenburg was designated as one of the seven electors in the Holy Roman Empire going all the way back to 1417. It's actually, by being one of those electors, it gave the Elector of Brandenburg prestige that he got to be one of the electors. But when you get to the 17th century, Brandenburg is not significantly involved in the affairs of the Holy Roman Empire. Marriages had increasingly through time given the Hohenzollerns control of German principalities in central and western Germany, but the prince really had little power over his nobility. So the Hohenzollerns, which is the name of a family, just like Stipp is the name of a family, really don't have any real power. They've got prestige because they're the elector, one of the electors of the Holy Roman Empire. But through time, they will gain more power. So first we'll look at Frederick William, who was known as the Great Elector from 1640 to 1688. That's him down there in the picture. First look at his background. This is Frederick William, the Great Elector. His background, he's a strict Calvinist, but he will grant religious toleration to Catholics and Jews. So Calvinism had spread up into Prussia here. He'll admire the Swedish system of government, and he admires the economic power of the Netherlands. So he looks outside of Prussia at things that he admires. There's an ongoing struggle while he's ruling between Sweden and Poland for control of the Baltic after 1648, which is after the Thirty Years' War, and after the wars of Louis XIV, and that created in Prussia an atmosphere of permanent crisis. Remember, we saw that these absolute rulers will use these situations of crises or wartime emergencies to take more power to themselves. And so Prussia was invaded in 1656 and 7 by Tartars of southern Russia, who will kill or carry off as slaves more than 50,000 people. So they've got that kind of stuff going on after the Thirty Years' War. Invasion will weaken the noble estates, and it will strengthen the urgency of the elector, Frederick William, the Great Elector, his demands for more money and a larger army. It just makes sense. He's saying, you give me more power, you give me more money, you give me a better army, and we can take care of invasions like the Tartars from southern Russia. And so this situation is going to allow him to grab more power. Prussian nobles will refuse. The towns were like, didn't like this power grab, but the nobles are going to refuse to join in the towns in resisting royal power. So the Great Elector is basically going to establish Prussia as a great power. This is Frederick William. The Great Elector is going to establish Prussia as a great power, and he'll lay the foundation for the future unification of Germany. That's still a long time coming off in the 19th century. Probably the most significant thing that the Great Elector, Frederick William, does is he oversees Prussian militarism and creates the most efficient army in Europe. I mean, he'll create an army where they've got 30,000 soldiers for a population of 1 million. Now, I don't know the equivalent numbers for the United States. We have 300 million people. Let me get my calculator out, I guess, right here. We'd have to have 30,000 times 300, right? We'd have to have 9 million soldiers for that to be equal. I don't think we have 9 million soldiers in our military. So, big time on militarism. And he'll employ military power and taxation to unify his Rhine holdings, Prussia, and Brandenburg into a strong state. And if you remember when we looked at the map, or you can back up and look at one of those earlier slides, you can see that Prussia, that there were separate holdings that were spread out, and he's going to unify them into a strong state. He'll also increase military spending, which he's going to achieve through heavy taxes. The taxation in Prussia is going to be twice that of Louis XIV in France. The Prussian nobility is not exempted from paying taxes. This is different. Remember, we're looking at Eastern absolutism. It's different than the Western absolutism of Louis XIV and others, because the nobility is not exempted. And soldiers are going to serve as tax collectors and policemen. Therefore, the bureaucracy of government is going to grow under Frederick William the Great Elector. And he's laying the foundation for an absolutist state in the 17th century. Now, the Junkers are going to form the backbone of the Prussian military. The Junkers are the Brandenburg and the Prussian landed nobility. They dominate the estates of Brandenburg and Prussia, but they're going to be the backbone of this Prussian military officer corps. In other words, they are going to command the peasant army. So they're the officers, the Junkers, the nobility will be the officers in Frederick William the Great Elector's army, and the peasants are going to end up being the actual soldiers. And in 1653, hereditary subjugation of the serfs is going to be established. Why do they establish this? Because the crown, Frederick William the Great Elector, is going to be thankful for the nobles for supporting him and for serving in his military officer corps. And so he's going to say, you guys can have full control over your peasants. And you can see, we've kind of looked at it broadly. Now you've got an exact example with Frederick William the Great Elector on how this process happens during a wartime emergency, and the nobility gives up some of their rights, like, we're going to serve in the military, but in return for serving you loyally, Frederick William the Great Elector, we are going to get full control over our serfs. Frederick William will also encourage industry. He'll encourage trade. He'll import skilled craftsmen. He'll import Dutch farmers to learn and bring in new ideas. New industries will emerge in Prussia during Frederick William the Great Elector's reign. Woolens, cotton, linens, velvet, lace, silk, soap, paper, iron products. This is the time period when other countries are going out around the world, but efforts at overseas trade will largely fail due to Prussia's lack of ports. If you go back and take a look at the map, Prussia has a lack of ports except for maybe way up on the Baltic, which is freezing cold, and their lack of naval experience. So it all kind of starts, this Prussian absolutism gets started with Frederick William, the Great Elector, 1640 to 1688. Remember, this is the same time period as the English Civil War is going on, as England is becoming more constitutional, going up to 1689. Prussia is becoming more absolutist under Frederick William, the Great Elector. All right, then you get Frederick I, or Elector Frederick III. So this is Frederick I. He's also called the Ostentatious, or Frederick the Ostentatious, but he gets the title the First King of Prussia. Frederick I, or Elector Frederick, is going to be the most popular of the Hohenzollern kings. He will seek to imitate the court of Louis XIV. He'll encourage higher education. He'll found a university, encourage the founding of an academy of science, will bring in and welcome immigrant scholars. Your book says that he was weak of body and mind, but he's the most popular of the Hohenzollern kings. He'll fight in two wars against Louis XIV to preserve the balance of the European balance of power, that not one country gets too powerful, and France was threatening to be too powerful. He fights against, this is Frederick I, or Elector Frederick, the 1688 to 1713. He'll fight the War of the League of Augsburg, in the War of Spanish Succession, which we've talked about before. He allies himself with the Habsburgs, so the Prussian Frederick I allies himself with the Habsburg, and what you get is the Elector of Brandenburg, which is really what this has been. The Hohenzollerns have been the Elector of Brandenburg slash Prussia, is now recognized internationally as the King of Prussia, and so the Frederick I is called, or the Ostentatious, and ostentatious just means you're showy, in return for aid to the Habsburgs, is kind of given the title King of Prussia. Therefore, Frederick I is the first King of Prussia. You then have Frederick William I. I know all these names sound the same, but imagine a family where people name their kids all kind of the same name. So now you got Frederick William I, 1713 to 1740. He's known as the Soldier's King. Probably the most important Hohenzollern regarding the development of Prussian absolutism. He's the most important one in pushing it towards absolutism. He's Calvinist like his father. There's Calvinism in this family. He's obsessed with finding tall soldiers for his army. This guy will basically send out recruits because he believes that tall soldiers, he had the belief that tall people were superior in strength, superior in endurance, and so what he would do is he'd send out his guys throughout Europe looking for tall people. When they'd find tall people, they'd try to recruit them. If that meant kidnapping and taking them, sometimes they'd do that, looking for these tall soldiers. Well, the what the moms used to say across Europe is, at this time period, was they'd tell their kids, stop growing or the recruiting agents will get you. They're kind of saying, don't keep growing, the recruiting agents are coming to get you if you're getting too tall. So this is Frederick William I, the Soldier's King. I think he's crude, he's kind of a dangerous guy, he's kind of psychotic, I think, but probably the most talented reformer in the Hohenzollern family, and he's going to make Prussia a more absolutist place. He will infuse, this is Frederick William I, will infuse militarism into all of Prussian society. Prussia becomes known as the Sparta of the North. Remember when you've studied Greece before and you've looked at Athens and Sparta, and Athens is this democratic place usually you'd learn about it as, and you'd learn about Sparta, another city-state, as this militaristic city-state. So Prussia becomes known as the Sparta of the North. Frederick William I himself always wore a military uniform. He always wore the military uniform. He's highly disciplined himself. He'd start work at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. By 10 o'clock, he's out there on the parade grounds examining the soldiers, and he would actually beat people with just little minor infractions. He'd beat them with his walking stick. So he kind of views the world as a dog-eat-dog mentality, and we need to train, and we need to be militaristic for this. So society becomes rigid and highly disciplined because we need to get better. It's a dog-eat-dog world. He develops the idea of unquestioning obedience as the highest virtue. It's kind of the militaristic chain of command idea that you don't question the people that are above you. And it's the most militaristic society. Prussia becomes the most militaristic society of modern times. He will nearly double the size of the army. I mean, it was already large. We talked about it being 30,000 soldiers for 1 million people. Prussia's growing, but he'll nearly double the size of the army. It'll be the best army in Europe for the time period. It'll become Europe's fourth largest army after France, Russia, and Austria. Prussia will have the fourth largest army, but it's 12th in population. So just trying to show you kind of that balance there. There's a strongly militaristic society. 80% of the government's revenues go towards the military. That's how much money is being spent on war preparation. But the Prussian army, I mean, you think, wow, these people are so militaristic. The idea is that the Prussian army was designed to avoid war through deterrence. And really, the only time Frederick William I fought a war is when Sweden occupied a city in northern Germany, and they go in and they push the Swedes out. So Prussia and militarism go hand in hand. Under Frederick William I, Prussia will have the most efficient bureaucracy in Europe. They'll remove the last of the parliamentary estates and the last of local self-government, and he'll demand absolute obedience and absolute discipline from any civil servants who work for the government. Promotions are based on merit, so there's a sort of meritocracy that goes on that you can actually rise through the ranks. But, I mean, back to this idea of absolute obedience. I just want to give you a quote from what Frederick William I said. He said, "I must be served with life and limb, with house and wealth, with honor and conscience. Everything must be committed except eternal salvation. That belongs to God, but all else is mine." This is what makes the bureaucracy happen. This is the move towards unquestioned, absolute obedience for his civil servants. Now, there is the carrot out there that promotions are based on merit, and some commoners are actually going to be able to move up to positions of power. There will be higher levels of taxation in Prussia. You're paying for this massive army that you're building, and so it just makes sense that that has to go up. The Junkers, remember the landed nobility of Prussia and Brandenburg? The Junkers will be like the officer cast in the army, like I've said before. In return, they support the king's absolutism. So they've got the higher level in the army. They're not in the peasant soldier class. But in return, they support this king, Frederick William's absolutism. It'll also establish approximately 1,000 schools for peasant children during this time period. So this is Frederick William I, Loventhal soldiers, the soldiers' king, creating the Sparta of the North, and probably the most important Hohenzollern, bringing Prussia this absolutist society.